Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us for our podcast this week. We're continuing our conversation this week with David Dennis. David is the CEO of Eckerd Connects, which is a large nonprofit that operates in a number of states to help at-risk kids and families. And he has learned a number of lessons in his career, and he's going to share some of his thoughts today. I'm looking forward to our conversation with David. So thinking back to your first leadership position where you had to put together a team, you had to hire a team, thinking now over those years where you've hired a lot of people for different roles, put executive teams together, what advice would you give somebody that's in that position now where they're going to have to put together a team?
Never hire friends. Okay. Hang out with your friends. Don't hire your friends. Regardless of how much they need a job, help them find a job someplace. Be their friend, support them, encourage them. But hiring them is a poor decision. So I would be number one. Number two, never underestimate a resume. Never allow your decision to hire somebody be determined by how enjoyable the interview was. How much you liked the person, how much you enjoyed them, how much the team enjoyed socializing with them, what a great communicator they are. Resumes don't lie. So whatever is on that resume is exactly what you're going to get. Can people grow and can people change? Absolutely. But there will be core and key elements that were consistent in that resume that are going to show up the day they come to work with you. If you have somebody on a resume that's been job hopping, even if it's earlier in the career, everywhere they've been, it's 3 months here, 6 months there, a year and a half here, 2 years there, that's what you're getting. So now, can your place be the place you mentor them to teach them how to weather the storms and go through challenges and grow from them and stick it up? Yeah, but you're gambling if you hire somebody that has shown you so far they can't stick it out when the going gets tough. So I would encourage you to don't hire friends. Be sober with people through your interview process and trust the resume, not your feelings. If a person has proven that they can do the work that you're hiring them to do effectively someplace else or work very similar to that, and make sure you hire somebody that has demonstrated that they can. If you're hiring somebody to be in a situation that's going to involve them working closely with a board, that can be very difficult. They have zero experience working with the board. Why on earth are you going to be shocked and surprised when you hire them and they come in and they make every mistake you can make with the board? You know, that's just really important to me. Those two things. The last thing I'd say is hire to compliment yourself, not to pleasure yourself. It's much like the college degree. You know, don't hire a bunch of people because that's who you think you'd enjoy hanging out with. Hire people that, if I hire that person, they're going to make this team better. They're going to make the organization better. We're going to complement my gifts and my talents and hire people that align with your organization's mission and vision and values. And so I think those are really important things.
Good. So you mentioned board, working with a board, and I know that's something that a lot of new leaders that are coming into a role where they're maybe have never worked with a board, maybe they've been part of organizations where they've served on a board as a volunteer. What advice would you give a person that's moving into that role where they're having to work with a board, and what advice would you give?
You know, I think the most important thing is to get a proper understanding of a board. Early in my history of working with boards, boards were a necessary evil. They were an annoyance. They were a hindrance. They were a burden. They were frustrating because I had the wrong view of a board. I had the wrong paradigm, if you will, when it comes to a board. Over the years, I've come to realize your board is the organization's greatest asset. The board is no organization will ever be better than its board. So that's a complete evolution for me. So a board is critically important, but it's also important when you have a board to understand, to find out before you take a job with a board, to find out what is the board's philosophy of governing. That's critically important. So if you're going to take a job and there's a board, you need to understand what is the government structure that board operates under. So if you take a job and you've got a board that operates more as a managing board of directors, which in my definition means they're very involved in personnel decisions, they're very involved in operations decisions, then when you take the job, if your expectation is for them not to be, and for them to be involved in managing you, but not the ops and not personnel decisions, then you're going to be very frustrated. If, on the other hand, you take a job and you have a board and you have a clear understanding that this board's the only person they hire and fire is the CEO, and if that's me, and they clearly understand that and embrace that, and it's for me to manage the rest of the personnel operations decisions, that their job is strategy, fiduciary responsibility, and risk of the organization, setting strategic vision with the leaders, and et cetera, then you're on the same sheet of music, and you all have a common understanding. And so if, on the other hand, you come in and you really aren't very strong as an operational leader, and you're kind of counting on them to provide a lot of that, and they hire you, and they don't give you that because they're like, no, we hired you, we're hands off, and that could be a panic as well. So I think it's really important to understand the governing structure and philosophy and approach of your board, and then beyond that, so you want to make sure you're in sync with that. And then the other thing is, you really want to get to know your board. You really want to know what's important to them in terms of how they like to be communicated with. I've got some board members that prefer face-to-face visits with me. I've got some that prefer a phone call. I've got some that prefer an email unless it's something critically important or unless they've got a question. So how they like to receive information is important. No surprises is very important. Over-communicate with the board. Assume nothing. And so communication, how they like to be communicated with, frequent communication without over-communicating too many details unless you're asked for more. And so value them. Treat them like they're valued. Make sure when you have board meetings that they do not have to ask questions that could make them feel embarrassed or unknowledgeable or ill-prepared. So make sure before any board meeting that they are all prepared for the board meetings. Any questions they've got, they're able to ask those in their committees, or if it's out of their committee, give them a chance to get that information. Get information in the board meeting. It's going to be in the board meeting to them at least 2 weeks ahead of time so that they can be prepared. So that those are just some things. Develop relationships with them and work with them. Like you said, you know, how would you advise working with the board? The operative word is work. It takes time. Educate them, equip them, encourage them, help them to become, have a successful experience. This won't be the only board probably in their life they're going to serve on. Let it be an experience that would cause them to leave better than you found them, more knowledgeable, eager to serve on another board, and able to serve better on the next board than they did on this board. So steward them well, steward their relationship well, those kind of things.
Good. So thinking back of people that were part of your journey, and you've got a number of people that sounds like have invested in you. How important is it for somebody that is in leadership position to have people around them that they're, you know, I think it's important to have mentors, as I know you would agree, but also mentoring others. How much of your time is spent mentoring others?
That's something that's real important to me, as I mentioned earlier in our conversation. Advancing the potential of others is my personal life mission. So I spend quite a bit of time doing that. Before our call this morning, I was meeting with a couple of young businessmen here in the community. One of them actually serves on our board, and the other one owns his own marketing business. But we meet every week, every Monday morning. And so that's something that's very important to me. My wife, Becky, and I have five kids. Mentoring them has been my top priority in my life. They're ages 29 down to 18, the youngest one just started college this year. But a great deal of my focus, all of my adult life, and Becky and I, our 31 years of marriage, has really been committed to really everything centered around that, mentoring our children. And that was mission number one.
That's great. I know you're a reader. I think I've asked you before, what are you reading? And but what are, if you were to call it down into the top three books that you have your staff read or you recommend others, what are the top books that you would recommend for a leader?
You know, one of them is an old book, and I don't even know if it's in print anymore, but I've reread it many times, and I'm rereading it again right now, and it's called The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz.
Sure.
And so I've almost completely worn it out, and so that it's just full of timeless, you know, one of my favorite verses in the Bible is, you know, without a vision, the people shall perish. And another one is, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And so those are very important. I really do believe those things. I believe that how a person thinks in their heart is how they end up going in their life. So I think thinking is real important. I have a little plaque I keep on my mantle. I've kept there for many, many years. And it says, only those who see the invisible will do the impossible. And everything that doesn't exist yet can seem impossible. But everything that exists physically at one time was also invisible. And so the first and most important thing is to have a vision for what could be, and to really spend time visioning what could be. What could be in your life, what could be true in your family's life, what could be true of an organization, in the life of somebody you're working with. It begins there. And to really nurture that vision, commit to it, and take steps to actually make it happen. But it starts with seeing it. And so I think visioning is real important. I think our mental attitude, how we view things is very important. You know, as I shared, I had a lot of adversity as a kid myself. And I tell young people I work with and staff that I work with that while it's important to understand what your God-given gifts are and to hone other talents and skills that aren't maybe necessarily your gifts, the things you know you need to become skilled at to be balanced and be your best to optimize your full potential. Those are what I would call, you know, part of your possibilities. But the other part of your possibilities is harvesting your pain. It's harvesting your past. It's harvesting experiences you've had that maybe weren't so pleasant or weren't so great, or whatever adversities, setbacks, disappointments. Mine was a little more severe than that. And so while I had lost my father, my mother, and my sister by the age of 5, everything that was supposed to be permanent in your life was removed. That's a pretty great life lesson to learn. Early on at age 5, there's no guarantees in life. There's no such thing as a sure thing. I don't know if there's anything more important for anyone to learn than that. That wouldn't be the classroom I'd want to learn it in. But, you know, it's one of the most powerful things I've ever learned. And so not being bitter about what happened to me, but learning from that experience how to be a better person myself. And so out of that, because I lost everything at such a young age, for example, and I got a second chance, you might realize and guess I have a very high sense of gratitude, which is to me the most important thing anyone can have in their life is a strong sense of gratitude. And I have an overwhelming sense of gratitude. The other thing I have, if you're around me much, would be you'd realize I have a really high sense of urgency. And when you get told by the age of 5 things that aren't supposed to be taken away from you and the things that are supposed to be permanent, you lose them at that age. You realize there aren't any sure things in life. You never take a day for granted. So I live every day with a very high sense of urgency because I know tomorrow may not be here. I may not have my family tomorrow. So they all get a hug from me every day. I tell them I love them every day because I realize what can happen. So I think, you know, harvesting all things in your life for your full potential, not just your gifts and talents and the positive relationships and mentors, but also things that are painful, disappointments in your life, maybe things that have happened to you by other people that were disappointing. Maybe feelings of failure that you may have because you didn't feel like you did this right or that right. Nothing should be wasted. We should try to find a way to work good out of everything. And so that's what I like about the book, Magic of Thinking Big. It's what's most important is not what's happened to you, or what's going to happen to you. It's going to be what you decide you're going to make of it. I'll tell this quick story. I was with a gentleman snow skiing in Vermont a few years ago. He was a retired political attorney, and I broke my leg the first day skiing with him while I was there. So I was at his house for several days, and he had apple cider in his fridge that he made because they had an apple orchard and they had a Christmas tree farm. And I drank so much of that apple cider. And one day I said to him, this stuff is like the nectar of the gods. How do you make apple cider? There's got to be a way to identify which of the apples are the most perfect apples that you use to make this stuff with. And he laughed and he said, wow, you really don't know how apple cider is made. He said, actually, it's the opposite. He said, cider is just all the bruised and damaged apples that didn't stay perfect and get put on the shelf at the store. They got knocked down because of a storm. The pickers accidentally knocked them. They got in the ground. They got bruised. And they either lay there and rot, or you pick them up and put them in the cider press and make cider out of them. And I thought, what a great picture of our life. All the bumps and bruises we may go through, or life circumstances or detours, we may not make it to the store shelf all shiny and red. You know, we have to ask ourselves, you know, when we do get bruised and go through adversity, are we going to lay there and rot and be a victim and become bitter? Or are we going to say, okay, how can I make cider out of that? Mm. I think that kind of life philosophy, you know, so it's not so important what happens to you, but how you respond to it and how you make good out of it. And so those are the kind of books I like to read. I've read way too many books like that to tell you today in this interview. But everything I read outside the Bible, and I, without question, the number one most influential book in my life has been the Bible. It's still, every time I read it, it marvels me. Even the things I don't fully understand, it's fascinating. It's been a source of strength and guidance and wisdom for me and comfort. And so that's the number one book, and it's the thing I still love reading the most. But any book to do with helping me to discipline myself to think better is what's the most important to me. Also, I like to read a lot of books on physical fitness, nutrition. The Bible, you know, says to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so I really believe that those things are all inextricably linked. I think your mind and your flesh, your heart, your spiritual part, your soul, you know, is all those things are inextricably linked. I think if you're not physically fit and healthy, it shows up in your mood and emotions. And, you know, if you're not healthy emotionally, it shows up in your eating habits. If you're not healthy spiritually, vice versa. So I read a lot of books about fitness and nutrition. I read a lot of books about leadership. I read a lot of books about how to think better.
It's good.
How to grow spiritually.
Great. So I know you're into productivity and making sure that you're doing not only just doing work, but doing the right work. Is there anything that's helped you as far as to be more productive, whether it's technology or a habit that you have that has benefited you?
Yeah, it's not technology so much as, even though I wear out my iPhone, I never stop. I'm always communicating with somebody. I'm always taking notes. I'm always thinking. I'm always sending encouragement notes to people. I'm always connecting. I'm a serial networker. You know, relationships are super powerful, and so I that's a great tool for all of that, and it's handy, and I can use it anywhere. But I say more important than that for me is I'm not naturally an organized person, but I realized that really early on. I was running my first residential program, and I just intuitively, because I knew the work so well, I just walked around every day and knew what had to be done well for that campus to run well. But then I was asked to take over five for another company. And all of them almost went under because I was there. And what I realized was I couldn't walk around all five of them. So the only way I could be effective in a macro way was to sit down and make myself really take note, literally take note and make list of what was it that I was doing when I was walking around and capturing those things that were the critical things that had to be done to run one program really well. And then once I put them on paper, I create a system where I could train others how to use the same tool to manage theirs and how to report to me information from that system. And so I that was fascinating for me. So I think for me, more than technology, it's developing a plan and executing the plan and capturing data off your efforts to execute the plan and continuing to perpetually recycle that information and continually find ways to improve. And it also creates a format for teaching, coaching, mentoring, and it also helps equip people to do their job well, which they appreciate. And so that's really more than technology is really kind of being a very committed to plans. I mean, that's very important. A strategic plan, but then also execution paths for those plans. And I realized early on that because I'm not naturally organized, if I didn't create those systems to manage me, I wasn't going to be successful. And I'm very driven to be successful and be a good steward of my life. Mm. And so I became kind of really focused and kind of that became a real priority for me. And it's become a real important part of my success, I think, as a leader.
Great. So when you're outside of work, what do you enjoy doing? What recharges you?
Going to the gym, hanging out with my dog and Boomer. And going for washing, but as I said earlier, the greatest joy is our family. You know, anything to spend time with them. We've got two granddaughters now. Any opportunity to spend time with my wife, my kids is the most recharging thing I do. That, and as I shared earlier, my spiritual life is real important. My faith's real important to me. So time that I spend in that way, growing in my faith, meditating and learning and growing as a person. That's still the most fascinating thing to me, because regardless of what's going on in your life and your circumstances or work or your family or anything else, nothing should or can keep you from still growing as a person. And it's really a limitless thing. I mean, it's endless. And so there's great joy in that for me. So regardless of what's going on at work, regardless of what's going on with family, regardless of anything, you can always come back and say, am I growing? Am I getting better because of this? Am I maturing because of this? Am I becoming a better person? Am I finding a way to become a better person? One of the things we tell all of our employees at work here, and I'm sure we fail at it every day, but they all know that what success looks like for us is if somebody comes to work for us, whether they stay till they retire or whether they stay a few years and get a better opportunity to go someplace else, we want them to be able to say two things. One, while I was there, I really truly got better at my craft. I became a better professional in my work there. I learned so much. And secondly, we want them to be able to say, I also became a better person. And that's very important to us. We want to treat each other in that way. We want to model an example in that way, and when we don't do that well, take ownership of that. That's really important to us. So you can't say that unless you're really striving to be a better person yourself every day. So
great. Any parting advice that you would give a new or up and coming leader?
Discover the magic of thinking big.
Great. Well, I know you're coming off a board meeting. You have a day off and you've taken time to talk to us today, David. Appreciate that and wish you continued success with Eckerd Connects and the great work that you're doing.
Thanks for taking time to talk to me and enjoyed visiting with you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.